Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. So now we will hear from the appellant again. And how many minutes for rebuttal? 5 minutes. Yeah, 5 minutes for rebuttal, and the clock's in front of you.
Well, I'd first like to say that regarding the landslide, it is not on my property. It is on the adjacent owned BES property, and it was caused in part by a city water bureau flushing the hydrant at the end of the street. The reason that that's an issue for us, for my lot, is now we have to provide an additional safety by basically along my property line to prevent it from sliding until we see what the city does to repair that. But then we will know what the issue is. We will be able to respond to, but my engineer, our soils engineer, has provided a analysis to provide basically, I think it's 12 caissons along the property line. That's obviously an additional cost to us that we didn't even bring up as a part of this, because the landslide I didn't want to address at this point. But since it's been brought up in public record, I will address it now. So that will be addressed through a process, hopefully through BES and the Water Bureau, determining how they're going to repair the landslide on their part. And hopefully the soils engineers will determine that there will be no further impact on my property. So to be really clear, the landslide is not on my property. It's about 15 feet on to BES's property to the east, but the landslide does affect my property. So second, Commissioner Saltzman, you asked early about LID. I can't remember.
That was Commissioner Fritz.
Okay. We discussed that possibility a few years ago, and even more recently with Public Works, about the possibility of doing that. It's a very arduous, long process to get to buy in. In doing the street determination, part of the reason that the street, whether it be one, two, or three lots, which the neighborhood says, well, we can do it and we can be shorter, was because there is a landlocked site. And either we could possibly do it to a certain point, but Michelle's lot, which used to be owned by Mr. Althoff, who was one of the neighbors that we knew back before he passed away, and Michelle and her husband Eric bought the lot, but that lot faces the unimproved street on Berkeley Way. So that we would have to at least extend the street to that point. The cost is a determining factor in mitigation, in the response to alternatives. The cost to develop this, the whole reason we even went to this point of dividing the lots was because of the cost of the infrastructure. If we could get a buy-in by all the neighbors, and that would include anybody abutting either Berkeley Way and or Cesar Chavez because of the water improvements to buy into an LID, that would be great. It's not going to happen. I just don't see it happening. So I have to look at it from purely my standpoint of how those infrastructure elements get provided, get developed. That's a requirement, as a part of our requirement. It's we have to do that. In response to the lot size, one of the things I want to say is, do you bicycle? I actually do, even though I look really big and fat. I bicycle, and I ride that bicycle, and that area, and I've done it for years. The nice thing about that is the fact that you can have the bluff, but if you go farther down into Eastmoreland, there are houses that are visible along the bluff, and there's the tennis courts, and then there's a lot of things as you go farther west along there you can see. From the center line of the Springwater bike path to the edge of the, if somebody built to the furthest setback on our property, it's 85 feet, and it's at about a 45-degree angle. So if you're on the Springwater corridor, standing on a bike path, and you're looking up, you may see, as the angle goes up, you may see the top of the houses. Now, if you're farther down toward Allied Chemical or something like that, you won't see it until you come around the bluff to maybe the bridge there. If you're familiar with there's a bridge that crosses over the Springwater corridor, the Johnson Creek. I do want to say that, lastly, that I do believe we met the approval criteria, because if you look at the lots, We have, and I'm going to say, look at one of my diagrams really quickly, page C1. It's in the back of the, it's drawing number, it's this one. You can kind of see a form field function of the proposed outlets or proposed homes, and they're very consistent with the rest of the neighborhood. And yes, where,
you know. Mr. Morello, your time is up, but I know I have a question, but there may be others.
I have a question. Did you look at, with two lots, how many more trees you could save?
Believe it or not, the trees on the lot aren't the ones that are issues. We have, we could save, I think, three trees. If you look at the diagram showing the trees and where the lots are, the preponderance of the trees being removed are for the right-of-way.
Well, if I'm looking at figure 5, and I don't know if you have it with you, but it seems like there's a lesser treed area here that could be divided into two lots and save these trees and these trees.
And even if that's three lots, depending on the development, when we met with planning, planning said you need to show all the trees gone. So most of those are trees are also are non-native. They're problematic trees. If we save them, I could design, as any architect could, a house that would incorporate that landscape. That's what I would love to do. If we get to a point where I could be a wholly the developer to design this, I would be ecstatic because I could design houses that would have green roofs and be able to take care of the stormwater.
And thank you. And I have one final question. Why does the street cost not change when you have the lot on Tenino where you'd have to do a street improvement on
because
Tenino?
Because of what we were told in the beginning that we would have to improve the street to a certain standard.
Right, but you'd have to improve Tenino, and there's no change in your estimated
street
cost.
Oh, I'm sorry. There is no improvements on Tenino at all. There's no improvements on Tenino.
Okay, I'll ask staff about that. Thank you.
Okay. You were just stating that if you were at the center line of the Johnson Creek bike trail.
Correct.
And your property was at the zero lot line, meaning, I assume, closest to the bluff.
The 5-foot setback from the bluff. We have a.
But you're proposing a 15-foot setback, aren't you, from the bluff?
Have a 15-foot setback that's required for the landscaping. And then from that, there's an additional 5 feet to the edge of where the house could be developed. So that's what I'm saying is the built line development, not the green space. I'm pardon me, not okay. The green space mitigation area.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, thanks, Mr. Lorello. So should we bring staff back up?
Please.
Maybe BES, come on up too. Well, both of you.
Both, please. I want transportation.
We want both transportation and environmental services.
And you might use these microphones. That one doesn't work very well.
Go ahead, Mr. Fritz.
Thank you. So I want us to look back a little bit into the history of the street vacation here, because the street vacation previously went through the proposed lot 4, is that correct?
Correct.
And what was the reason for the street vacation being approved?
If you saw in the slide, it's sort of a side bluff, so it was something from a transportation standpoint had no use. It would never be developed as a roadway.
Okay. And does anybody have in their documentation what was the lot area before the street vacation?
It's in the land use file, but I don't know it off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
And is there anywhere in the file a tree map showing which ones are native and which ones are non-native?
Yes, Exhibit C6.
I'm going to need some more time to look at this, so I would like to get that information.
Exhibit C6 is in the staff report that you just received.
Okay. All right.
There's a list in very small print.
And then why would no improvements whatsoever be required on Tenino?
Oh, one is the lot that was created is only 25 feet wide. And if you propose, and with a standard driveway at 10 feet with 3-foot wings, you've got that 16, so you have 9 feet left over. So you may have 2 or 3 feet of sidewalk on either side. Plus, you'd have to engineer the stormwater planters, the swales. And if you look at further east on that, you start getting closer to the P zone. So it would remain a very isolated piece of improvement that wouldn't extend any further.
But it looks on the aerial photograph as this, that there's no paved access to that lot currently.
It will probably come in as just a, it's not environmental zoning, so it will probably just get a driveway approach.
From the existing pavement?
From the existing pavement, just to a driveway into it.
And why was the applicant told that they couldn't do just a driveway off of Berkeley Way for their one lot that they were originally proposed to do?
I wasn't involved at that time, but the code hasn't, Title 17 hasn't necessarily changed. When you come in and develop a vacant lot, you start off with the requirement that you improve your entire frontage to current city standards. That hasn't changed. I think, and because that wasn't, I wasn't reviewing it at the time, so I'm not sure when it went from what they were told they maybe could have done a driveway approach off of the end of Cesar Chavez years ago.
You just said that we're not going to require the Antonino, but that we would have required it on the other end.
Well, from the time I got involved, what they were proposing on Berkeley Way is three lots.
Right, okay.
Commissioner Fritz, if I may speak, there's no other developable lots on Southeast Tenino, whereas on the north side of Berkeley Way, there are additional developable lots.
But we can't require this applicant to develop the entire 200 feet in order to benefit the landlocked lots on the other side. That would not be in compliance with a nexus requirement.
It may not be. Well, for nexus, we're looking at dedications, not street improvements. So I'm not going to speak for the city attorney, but we have been consistent in able to uphold frontage improvements for even a single-family home, even a replacement single-family home.
But if we were to, say, go with a two lots off of on Berkeley Way, leaving those other two lots landlocked, we would not be requiring this applicant to extend the street, would we?
Well, it starts off with a requirement to do your entire frontage. Under the process we started about a year ago with the co-location and the new Public Works Administrative Appeal process and the new Public Works process, to do less than the standard improvements requires you to go through an alternative analysis that gets looked at first in an administrative public works appeal and then to a panel and then to a board, which is the three chief engineers of the city eventually. In my opinion, and I don't want to guess what that process outcome would be, but I think the minimum roadway that would be required for this with even two lots is probably maybe half of the length up to that point where you get to the first developable landlocked parcel on the north.
But then are we not requiring this development to pay for the improvements for the other two lots?
It's, you know, the requirement is for a standard half street when you come in. It, unfortunately, the first person in ends up doing three quarters of a street because they have to do a minimum of a 20-foot roadway for legal access and for fire access. Typically, when the other side of the street would come in, that's when you would get the on-street parking and the curb and the sidewalk and the street trees on the other side. In this case, we only have three, so when those lots on the north side develop, it's probably likely the only thing will ask because of the environmental zoning and the guidance to do as least amount of disturbance in, even in the right-of-way, we maybe look at some sort of pathway or a separated pedestrian facility back out to Cesar Chavez.
Thank you.
And I think on the cost estimate as well, a lot of the cost for whether the street is 100 feet long or 200 feet, the engineering costs, the permitting fee costs, the design costs, are going to be relatively close because at that point you're just paying for extending asphalt. But the amount of engineering work that needs to go into it and the review fees are going to be pretty consistent.
So Bureau of Environmental Services, there were I guess I'm a little rusty on sort of evidentiary land use hearings where you can submit information right up to the hearing. So BS has reviewed the alternatives that were submitted by the applicant and does not find any adverse impact from a stormwater point of view upon Johnson Creek or a water quality point of view.
Correct. Do you want to expand on that?
I actually have a related question to that Rich, I don't know if you want to answer or Catherine, and because it is an evidentiary issue in terms of your staff recommendations, which are dated July 30th, and the hearings officer signed his report August 21st. So I'm just curious why that your staff recommendations aren't part of the record that he apparently considered.
They are part of his record. So Exhibit H2 is a hearings officer's exhibit. So the staff report was published 10 days prior to the first public hearing.
So help me understand why he decided apparently adverse to your recommendations, and your one of the alternatives you give to us is to overturn his opinion, and with the conditions apparently that are included in your staff report.
So with this type of appeal hearing, the applicant isn't here to present a new alternative or a new option that we haven't looked at before. He is still proceeding forward with his four-lot subdivision. What he is adding into the record, as he's allowed to under an evidentiary hearing, is the documentation of the alternatives that he dismissed throughout the process.
I see. So you don't want us to, if we move to overturn the hearings officer report with conditions, you don't want the conditions to be from your July 30th report, but rather the list you have in your...
I think the two lists would be fairly consistent.
The two lists?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you think like open space track maintenance agreements are all contained within the hearings officer, or within your staff recommendation?
Within the staff recommendation, but not the hearings officer decision.
I guess I'm still confused why, if he had that, why that doesn't address the issue.
So
that
my conditions of approval address things that need to be on the plat. They address development standards for the lot. They address monitoring requirements for the mitigation plantings. But what the hearings officer found is that the record didn't contain enough information to make the complete environmental analysis.
But you're saying if we overturn his decision and have the issues that you've identified in your July 30th memo, you'll make sure those conditions are met with specific proposals from the applicant as he proceeds down the development.
Right. So if you overturn the hearings officer decision, staff will return to you with revised findings and revised conditions of approval.
Okay.
For your
and those
approval.
Will address the hearings officer's concerns as well.
Yes, there would be new findings addressing those two pieces.
Gotcha. Okay.
And at that point, we would have the opportunity to reconsider our decision if at some point we didn't think the conditions were sufficient, or we would be simply tweaking the conditions.
You'd have to ask the city attorney that.
I guess we could do anything up till we voted.
Up till we vote.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just ask my staff if they can come and enlarge this photograph for me, Exhibit C6. I think the font is about 2 points. I can't read what the tree map is. So we have received this input on October 7th, and been given the hearings officer found that there wasn't an adequate alternatives analysis done. So neither we nor the neighborhoods have had a chance really to look at, are those real alternatives? Are there other alternatives that should be considered that would better protect the resources? And the burden of proof is on the applicant to show that the approval criteria are met. The hearings officer found that they weren't because that wasn't there. So I'm struggling as to how we could overturn the hearings officer's decision when really that it's that alternatives analysis which is the challenge, and there could be still further conditions of approval coming out of, you know, we still have to figure out, is this the least practicable alternative that best makes the keeps the resources together? Because the only alternatives that I saw were two with the four lots on the bluff with attached housing. But there's another alternative that could have all attached housing in the developable area. There's a very similar property in the far southwest neighborhood that was developed with that kind of housing. It's really beautiful, and it preserved a lot more of the environmental resources and stayed away from the trees. So I'm struggling as to why we would be looking to overturn the hearings officer's decision when the hearings officer's main point is the alternatives weren't properly considered.
Well, just one point I'd like to make is that The hearings officer has found consistently that an applicant isn't required to consider every alternative. He has to provide a set of significantly different alternatives, determine which of those are practicable, and of the practicable alternatives, which has the least environmental impact. He's made it very clear that staff is not to provide alternatives, this is an applicant-driven process. So you have before you the applicant's alternatives that he has considered, although I completely acknowledge what you've said about not having enough time to actually review those yourself.
But it seems to me, I mean, what we're getting at here is that were we to uphold the appeal, in a normal judicial proceeding, we might be able to send it back to a lower court and say, make new findings and bring it back. But under our system, we get to make the findings. We stand in the shoes. We supersede the hearing officer, so we don't have to go through that mechanism. We can uphold the appeal, direct you to come up with the conditions, and then we can consider those proposed conditions in light of our reading of the law.
And in fact, you know, were I to make a motion to overturn the hearings officer report, I would read into the record the conditions be the ones you've listed here, and I think you've heard the debate, you've heard the discussion, and you'd probably adopt findings to reflect the discussion. If I'm tracking at all what I've observed for the last 10 years in these hearings.
With all due respect, though, colleagues, unless your eyesight is a lot better than mine and you're able to actually look at that tree map, we can't make the finding that this proposal is the least detrimental alternative.
But they'll develop findings for us before we vote that should address that, is what I expect. And then once we have the specificity of what the findings that the staff developed consistent with our direction, they'll address those issues in their findings. And if we don't like one of the findings when they come back before us, we can change that.
I have a feeling
suggest
in
a, a better way of moving forward would be to set it over so that we all have time to look in, take more comment, you know, hold the record open so that the neighbors too have an opportunity to compare the proposed alternatives, and then come back and make a preliminary decision.
Well, I think the problem with that is we're going to if we went the other route, we'd come back, have a hearing, and we could potentially get testimony at that point, but. Frankly, after hearing about the length of time that has of people participating in this process, my sense, and I'm not putting words in anyone's mouth, is that this room is waiting for a decision, and I think it's incumbent on us to make a decision. And my preference, frankly, would be to uphold the appeal and to follow Commissioner Leonard's suggestion, because I think it gives us a chance to then closely scrub the what you come back. I think it's safe to say that if that's the will of the council, we'll be reviewing your draft with more attention than we would on some more routine land use matters to make sure that we agree with the conditions. But that would be my preference.
Would you be proposing to have a public hearing on the proposed findings?
Pardon me?
Would you be proposing to have a public hearing on the findings? We don't usually do that.
No, but we'd come back and have a discussion as a council. So I would, Commissioner Leonard, do you have a motion?
To be clear, this is a quasi-judicial process. This is not, I mean, we have different rules and standards of evidentiary submissions. Our considerations are different. This isn't, with all due respect to politicians, a political process. This is a semi-judicial process. So I think we need to stick with precisely what the state law says our role is here, and it is to make some decision. We absolutely have the right to review the specificity of those conditions based on those conditions when they come back. I expect that to happen. And I don't, in other words, I think any concerns I hear here can be vetted out through that process.
But so are you saying that we could come back and say, no, you can have a two-lot subdivision or a three-lot subdivision instead of a four-lot?
Well, I don't agree with that, and that will not be consistent with any motion I make. I think the motion I will make will be consistent with what we've been provided here and responsive probably and reflective of the July 20th memo, correct? July 30th memo with July 30th memo would be my expectation. So if you're open to a motion, Mr. President, I would move to uphold the appeal and overturn the hearings officer's decision contingent upon the following conditions of approval. That the approval criterion that staff develop for us to consider at our next hearing address the issues of open space tract, maintenance agreements, public street improvements, public water main extension, fire bureau requirements, performance guarantee for mitigation plans and monitoring, construction management, development standards, and monitoring requirements and corresponding maintenance, and that those conditions be roughly similar to the memo, staff memo dated July 30th, 2012.
I will second the motion.
Okay, further discussion? Okay, if not, Carla, please call the roll.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
This makes a mockery of the land use process because we're supposed to be considering the approval criteria which require that we consider the alternatives which we haven't had the opportunity to do. No.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye. So the appeal is, the appellant is upheld. The appeal, hearings officer decision is overturned, and the decision is upheld with the conditions as stated by Commissioner Winter.
Commissioner Saltzman, let's be clear. This was a tentative decision today. You're going to need to continue this to a future date to consider the proposed findings and conditions that staff will draft. And then to take a final vote.
Okay. And do we need a time for those?
Yes, we need a date and time certain, or a date and time.
How much time does staff need?
Staff needs approximately 2 weeks to draft revised findings.
If we gave you three, would we get an extra few days to review your findings before?
Yeah.
Sure. Yes.
I think in this instance, we'd want additional time to review it before we come back.
What's that date, Carla?
31st, I think.
Yeah.
3 weeks out, if we could put it in the morning session, would that be okay?
Yes.
Let's do 10 a.m. on October 31st.
Okay.
I'm going to be in a hearings officer hearing at that time.
Okay.
So staff is not available.
At that precise time?
It's at 9 a.m.
We'd like to have you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we scheduled for a pump
station? It's for my what?
It's for your pump station. The Fulton Pump Station.
Oh, the Fulton Pump Station. Yeah. Well, we certainly need you there.
So are we scheduled for an afternoon on that Wednesday?
Well, I've got a 2 and a 3 o'clock on hold. This shouldn't take more than 10 minutes or so, maybe.
Well, why don't we do this as the first item
at 2 o'clock. Yeah. Something good.
On the 31st.
On the 31st, yeah. Wednesday. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much. And people need a break, or should we move into our next time certain?
I've got to get out of here, so let's move ahead.
Okay, let's move ahead. So, could you read item 1155, please?
Amend the comprehensive plan and zoning map for properties along and near Southeast 122nd Avenue between Powell Boulevard and Foster Road. Did you also want 1156?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Direct the Bureau of Transportation to work with the Oregon Department of Transportation to prepare a transportation safety improvement plan for the intersection of Southeast 122nd Avenue and Powell Boulevard, including a financial plan to allocate the cost associated with identified improvements.
Welcome. I'll turn it over to Deborah Stein and John Cole.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Deborah Stein with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'm really pleased to be here today to kick off the presentation on the 122nd Avenue Rezone Project. I think this project has a lot in common with the Cully Commercial Corridor project that you just decided on last month. Like Cully, this is a community-inspired and a community-driven process to create more opportunities for neighborhood-serving retail and economic opportunity, employment in a predominantly residential area that has been underserved for quite a while. Also, like the Cully project, this project embodies the Portland plan to promote our city as a prosperous, educated, healthy, and equitable city. And I think there's a lot in this project that really puts some of those concepts on the ground, looking at providing additional economic activity, providing greater opportunities for residents to be able to meet their daily needs in their neighborhood. This project comes out of the East Portland Action Plan. This was identified as a really high priority by the community, and it's really thanks to the great advocacy and the great commitment of community leaders, community members in East Portland who made this happen, who really advocated for this project to take place, and their tireless commitment throughout. I also just want to mention that through this project, there were a lot of community discussions that helped advance some issues that go a little bit beyond the scope of this particular project, but are issues of vital concern to East Portland, issues about design and density of multifamily housing, the density and infrastructure and how they relate, neighborhood scale, economic development. Those are all issues that came out of these discussions, and we've really been hearing those. And while they don't all get addressed in this project, they're being advanced into our current conversations about the comprehensive plan update. So we're keeping those conversations alive and moving forward. But I think through this process, we were really able to elevate and understand some of those issues better. So it's very relevant, very meaningful to us right now. So with that, I'm going to introduce John Cole, who is the project manager, and he could tell you a little bit more about the project.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, commissioners. Over the last year, I have been working in outer southeast Portland with Chris Scarzello, the East District Liaison, to carry forward some of the ideas that Deborah has talked about this afternoon. I hope to briefly walk you through the proposal for rezoning properties on 122nd Avenue, answer any questions you may have, and then at the end of that process, we'll be asking the commissioners to adopt an ordinance approves some zone changes recommended by the Planning and Sustainability Commission to adopt a resolution, as Deborah had mentioned, that directs the city's Bureau of Transportation staff to work with the Oregon Department of Transportation to develop a traffic safety plan for the intersection of 122nd Avenue and Powell Boulevard that will support the additional traffic that's anticipated with the new levels of development at that intersection. And then as sort of a housekeeping item to approve an amendment to that adoption ordinance that recognizes that this item was originally scheduled for your September 19th meeting, but was rescheduled for today's hearing because a quorum was lost at that meeting. This is a map of the project area that we were concerned with. At the north end of the light brown area is Division Street, but we were primarily concerned with Powell Boulevard at the north end of our rezoning efforts down to Foster Road at the south end. This is an area that was annexed to the city in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Since then, it has experienced a population growth rate higher than the city as a whole, roughly 10 times the growth rate between 1990 and 2000 has been experienced at the city citywide level. There's also been a significant increase in racial and ethnic diversity in this area as the non-white population has increased from 12% of the total to over 31% over the last 20 years. This also represents the eastern boundary of the Lentz Town Center Urban Renewal District. It's also an area that serves the David Douglas School District. In response to some of the issues that have arisen since this area's annexation to the city has worked with neighborhood leaders on some planning efforts, including adoption of the East Portland Action Plan in 2009, and then a subset of that discussion, the Southeast 122nd Avenue study, a pilot project of the Portland Plan in February of 2011. As part of that pilot project, There was a number of recommendations for implementation efforts, and the City Council directed the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability over this last year to identify opportunities for additional neighborhood-serving commercial areas, as well as to look at opportunities to energize economic activity and improve some of the design standards in the neighborhood. So we undertook that particular effort. We worked with a project advisory group that had been active in the pilot project earlier on, and these were members that were residents of the neighborhood or members that were active in some of the business associations in the area, held a number of community walks, open houses, and briefings, as well as some of the more traditional outreach efforts. We worked with the advisory group to develop a set of criteria that we could use to evaluate specific properties and determine whether or not they could contribute to the neighborhood through being rezoned, and what the appropriate zone would be. We also started out with some additional standards that we would look initially at existing commercial nodes that exist in that neighborhood along Holgate, along Herald, and along Powell, and would pay attention to what the rezonings would do to the surrounding residential neighborhoods, with an understanding that we would try not to negatively impact the adjoining residential properties. So we ended up with proposals that I'll go into a little more detail with you here today on, that fall into roughly four geographic areas. At the north, at the top end of this particular map, is the intersection of 122nd Avenue and Powell Boulevard. Midway down, you'll see some proposed rezonings at the intersection with Holgate. Further south, there is a stretch of purple and red that is proposed for some rezonings at Raymond Street, heading south. And then in a related matter, down at the bottom of your map is the Leach Botanical Gardens. The Parks Bureau, when they understood that we were going through this particular effort, contacted us and suggested some rezonings that support their efforts at the Botanical Gardens, and I'll talk about all of those here in more detail. It's a little bit hard to see where the streets are in these particular maps that really focus on the proposed rezonings. So let me try to use my pointer here to show you that here is 122nd Avenue running north and south, and it intersects Powell Boulevard here running east-west across your map. The red properties that you see on this map front on 122nd Avenue, and the proposal before you today is to rezone those from residential to a neighborhood commercial designation. The three areas before you in blue are properties that gain access from Powell Boulevard, and we've stopped short of recommending full rezoning of these properties as part of this legislative process. But today we propose changing the future land use designation on these properties to neighborhood commercial. What this stutter step does, if you will, is send a signal that the city would like to see these properties developed as commercial properties in the future. It saves the individual applicants time and money on their subsequent private application to the city to rezone their properties. But it allows the Bureau of Transportation and the State Office of Transportation an opportunity to review specific rezoning applications and to assign certain improvements in the right-of-way to those development proposals that would mitigate for the increased traffic that is anticipated to accompany that rezoning, and to improve some of the safety circumstances at the intersection of Powell Boulevard and 122nd that were identified as part of our review process. Traveling south to the intersection with Holgate Boulevard, the property in red is proposed to be rezoned from a combination of mixed commercial and R2 multi-dwelling residential to a storefront commercial designation. This is normally a zoning district that we would apply closer into the center of town, but this is an area that has seen some recent development of multifamily residential projects, notably Leander Court, Party Commons, and Commissioner Fish Svoboda Court. We think that the development standards associated with the storefront commercial district would be compatible with that recent residential development and could make this intersection really a nice, identifiable exclamation point, if you will, along the southeast 122nd corridor.
Since you mentioned, I just put a plug in for our affordable housing partners. Interesting thing as you go out to these neighborhoods is if you find single-family and multifamily development where we've worked with Human Solutions or we've worked with Jesse Beeson at Proud Ground, and in many of the neighborhoods, the subsidized housing is the most attractive. I mean, both in terms of the aesthetics of the housing, they're affordable and they're built to green standards. And it's very exciting what's happening in this cluster. They are in effect the standout properties in an area that's in transition.
Does the CS zone require commercial?
None of the city's commercial zoning districts require commercial development. In all of them, the developer does have the option of developing a residential project.
So we've run into some problems in other areas of the city where neighbors were hoping for neighborhood-friendly commercial stores and instead have gotten either convenience stores, liquor stores, or multifamily apartments with no parking. So can you address those concerns?
We've been hearing that quite a bit, and that is one of the issues we're looking at in the comprehensive plan update, because we want to take a fresh look at our commercial zones and determine to what degree we want to allow. It's for a long time been city policy to encourage housing in all zones as a possibility, as an opportunity. We want to look at, are there locations where we want to require commercial uses on the ground floor, or are there other things about developing residential uses in commercial that we'll be taking a look at? We didn't do it in this project, but we know that that's an issue.
So is there anything that we can do as part of this project to make it more likely that neighbors will get what they've spent such a long time working on, specific to these particular rezonings, since we're rezoning them right now?
We wouldn't be able to add something in this case without changing the base zone or doing something that would have more citywide implications, and we weren't in a position through this project to open up the citywide conversation, which is why we think the appropriate place to do that is through the comprehensive plan. So I'm not aware of something we could do in this location that would address that immediately, other than advocacy and working, you know,
this is
encouragement as opposed to regulations.
A first reading, right? So we have till next week before we vote on it?
Yes.
So just popped into my mind, what if we made it a comprehensive plan designation with some kind of something to... Just something for you to think
with
about.
With a condition of you.
Yeah. I feel bad when neighbors in other areas have put a lot of effort into doing this kind of project, and staff mm-hmm. also, mm-hmm. and then we end up not being able to stop the kind of development we don't want, and then I get a lot of angry emails, as do you, and I don't really have a good answer as to why.
So in this case, your concern is if a newly zoned commercial property were suddenly developed as residential.
Yes, or just let's brainstorm over the course of this coming week, since we are doing these particular sites, if there's anything at all that we could do to make it more likely that we get the kind of development that we're all hoping for.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. If we move south then to an area that begins at the north end of this light purple at Raymond Street. At the intersection of Raymond Street and 122nd, there's a proposal to add on four corners of that particular intersection CN1 neighborhood commercial zone. As we move south from there, the darker purple mid-block is a mixed commercial zone that the city uses that allows for commercial development and requires, if there's a significant redevelopment component, to include residential development with that new commercial activity. And then south in the brighter red is an expansion of an existing CN2 zone that's at the corner of Herald Street and 122nd. And then you see kind of an individual R1 to CN1 zoned rezoning. It has the number 14 attached to that. And that's a recognition of an existing nonconforming use at that particular intersection between the Springwater Corridor and 122nd. On map 4, even though I'll talk a little bit more about the Leech Botanical Gardens here, I think I should take a moment and indicate at the intersection of Foster Boulevard and 122nd Avenue, there is an existing node of general commercial zoning at that intersection. And initially, we looked at expanding that particular commercial area and decided not to expand the zoning in that area because we could not see a way of doing that that added significantly to the likelihood of its redevelopment as a commercial property without interfering with some of the neighborhoods, some of the residential streets that butt up against that particular node. Further south, as I mentioned, is sort of an administrative housekeeping item. You'll see that the staff is proposing to rezone all or a portion of four residential lots that have been acquired by Leech Botanical Gardens over the years that have retained their R10 zoning. The proposal is to add the open space zoning to those properties. This is consistent with the current use of Leech Botanical Gardens and its future mission. There is no development anticipated in association with this particular rezoning. So, as Deborah mentioned at the beginning of this presentation, the provision of this additional zoning that supports neighborhood-serving commercial uses in what is otherwise an underserved neighborhood with this type of commercial zoning is consistent with some of the strategic elements of the Portland plan, most notably the Healthy Connected City strategies that talks about putting daily activities within reach of all of our residential neighborhoods, and the economic prosperity and affordability strategy that promotes the development of neighborhood-serving commercial areas. So our request of the City Council this afternoon is the adoption, or to set the stage for the adoption of the ordinance in your packet, amending the comprehensive plan and zoning map as shown in the 122nd Avenue study report, one that was reviewed by the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and to adopt a resolution directing PBOT to develop a traffic safety plan for Southeast 122nd Avenue and Powell Boulevard, including a financing plan to apportion the costs of the anticipated improvements at that particular intersection. There are members of staff from both ODOT and PBOT in the audience. If you have any questions, alternatively, I'll be available to answer any questions after you take public testimony.
A special thank you for including Leech Botanical Garden. And with this council's support, we put back the $1.something million to help them jumpstart their master plan. So thank you for including that in your study and for supporting the work.
Okay, I know a number of council members have to leave, so we're at risk of losing a quorum. So I'm going to put everybody on the clock here. So why don't you call up the first four people that have signed up to testify.
I understand Superintendent Gray has to leave early, so if she could.
Oh, good. She can come up. And one of the first ones up.
Yep, Chris Smith, Nick Sovey, and Mark White as well.
Okay. I'll apologize, we ran late on the previous item. So we'll start with
the superintendent was a keen observer of that.
I was a keen observer of that, yes.
I saw her head nodding. So Superintendent Gray of the Park Grove School District and also a member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Go ahead, read it off.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Yeah. My name is Karen Fisher Gray, and I'm the superintendent of the Park Grove School District and a Planning and Sustainability Commissioner. It is my distinct privilege to serve on the commission. I am also an original member of the East Portland Action Plan Committee and have been a strong advocate of all things East Portland. I am also on the policy expert group for the comprehensive plan in the area of youth and education development and success. The East Portland Action Plan has more than 260 action elements that include a strong emphasis on the development of infrastructure, transportation, and economic development. We are working very hard to accomplish each and every one of these action goals so that we can effectively create and improve healthy, connected neighborhoods and livability in East Portland. To that end, one of the East Portland Action Plan goals is around safety and economic development of Powell Boulevard. On June 26, 2012, the Planning and Sustainability Commission voted to recommend approval of a rezoning proposal that would add 22 acres of commercially zoned property to Southeast 122nd Avenue between Powell Boulevard and Foster Road. The proposal is the result of nearly a year-long process to address residents' concerns about the lack of neighborhood-serving commercial development. 2 acres of property owned by the Portland Parks Bureau as part of the Leech Botanical Gardens were also recommended to be rezoned, and we need all of the parks and green spaces we can get in East Portland. The Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendation included approximately 6 acres of land near the intersection of Powell Boulevard and Southeast 122nd Avenue that had tentatively been withdrawn by city staff in response to concerns that ODOT had about safety. The commissioners directed staff to work with ODOT to resolve these issues, and they have. On September 11, 2012, the Planning and Sustainability staff returned to the PSC meeting to report back regarding the safety issues. 6 acres of property in this pilot project will be changed in the recommendation from residential to commercial zoning, allowing further economic development of this critical area. A traffic safety plan was detailed and would be placed into the city's transportation system plan that would now make it eligible for grant funding for further investments and improvements. That would be great. There will be strategically located dedicated turns, sidewalk improvements, and additional signals. I want to thank the Planning and Sustainability Bureau staff and commissioners for their hard work on the project. I would also like to thank East Portland's good friend, Shelley Romero of ODOT. Finally, I would like to ask the council to accept the recommendations from the PSC to amend the comprehensive plan and zoning map regarding this pilot project and study, and ask for their solid and continued support for further development, not only of Powell Boulevard and 122nd Avenue, which extends into Park Rose, but of all the streets, sidewalks, green spaces, grocery store access, mixed housing, schools, and businesses in East Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving right along, we have another Planning and Sustainability Commission member, Chris Smith.
Chris Smith, member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I want to first thank the mayor and council for their wisdom in adding Superintendent Gray to our commission. Not only has she provided tremendous insight on education issues, but her East Portland focus has been a very valuable addition to the commission. I second all her remarks. Just like to summarize a little bit of what we heard in the process. We heard from people who were concerned that this would alter the character of the neighborhood, but I think we netted out that this corrects deficiencies in the neighborhood and will improve the livability. We heard from people who wanted to see all of 122nd be zoned in some form of commercial. We were concerned that that would prevent the nodes of commercial that we really need from forming successfully. And we heard from people who would like us to do more. And I think all of us on the commission would like to do more. This is a limited project. I think it does what we can do at this point. But I know that I, for one, and the comp plan will be looking for much stronger design standards for this part of Portland than we've had before to help improve the character and livability of this neighborhood. And I want to join my colleague in thanking ODOT for their flexibility in being willing to work with us on the safety issues around the intersection of 122nd and Powell and not making that a blockage to getting this commercial zoning to happen, and for expediting in their process, prioritizing funding towards those safety improvements. So I urge you to adopt the plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Nick Sovey, the Executive Director of Rose Community Development, and I was a member of the Project Advisory Group. And I wanted to encourage you to adopt the recommendations, and I also particularly wanted to thank the BPS staff, John Cole and Chris Garzello. I think they did a great job of reflecting the concerns of the community to try and bring more economic activity to 122nd Avenue. I gave you a letter, and I won't go all the way through that. I think the main points of that are the zoning reflect a mix. I think Chris just spoke to that. I think it's important to connect the street grid. I think that's one of the big barriers to healthy economy here, and also to encourage public investment. And I know you see lots of sophisticated GIS mapping. That's not what I gave you, so I'm going to explain what this is. And so this is a zoning map that's got the red, pink, blue, and yellow on it. And this is the area around 122nd between Powell and Holgate. And then there's the similar map of Hawthorne Division that is between 12th and Cesar Chavez. I think if you look at what's similar on those maps, you see that it's got a mix of lower density and higher density residential, commercial. I think the difference on the Hawthorne Division map is there's several parks, there's several schools, whereas if you look at the 122nd map, there's only one park and school ground, and that's a major need in the community. If you turn to the other map that has the orange lines on that, it's the same geographic area. And if you look at the 122nd Avenue, very little density, very poor connectivity, certainly compared to the inner southeast example. So I think the adoption of this plan is a really great first step, but I encourage council to keep going and address some of these other issues that will really make the neighborhood successful.
Thank you for your time in preparing these maps. That's really interesting.
Thank you. Mark.
My name is Mark White. I'm president of the Palhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association. Palhurst-Gilbert is the primary location of where 122nd is in this project. I'm here to express our endorsement of the project as a neighborhood association, and thank everyone who was involved. And I would like to also thank Commissioner Fritz for bringing to light the fact that changing zoning to commercial doesn't always necessarily mean commercial comes in. We do have a project that we would love to talk to you about as far as being the beginning, the jump-starting of commercial development, especially in the southern end of 122nd. And since I have a few minutes left, I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about it, because it's of great concern to me that we've actually come to the table with a project that incorporates not only commercial development, but also housing for seniors and for veterans. But it has been rejected by the PDC, who, for whatever reason, has declined to pursue it. This is the first time that we've ever asked for land acquisition in 15 years of being a part of the urban renewal area, and it's been declined. And I would probably say that this is the only project that's been offered to them that not only includes all the components that I stated before, but also includes an effort to prevent displacement that usually comes with gentrification. So it's really important for us to be be able to get some kind of economic development going in the southern end of 122nd, and any efforts that you could help in convincing the PDC that our neighborhood is worth investing in would be very appreciative. One of the problems that we have is that the entire urban renewal area has shifted to the west. And the last time I checked, 52nd and Foster was not East Portland. And that Lenstown Center urban renewal area was designated to help build an urban a town center for East Portland. Not only have we been disconnected from that, but an effort is in full force with multiple open houses on how to identify and spend money in the urban renewal area over the next 5 years in the Foster Corridor. So we're just asking for